One of the best surprise stories in the NHL this season, none other than the New York Islanders in their final season on the island. They are going out with a bang, to say the least. The voice of the Islanders, Chris King, joins us once again. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you?
Oh, I'm outstanding, man. I always respected the Islanders, obviously, growing up, watching them and the Oilers battle it out. Mike Bossy, one of the greatest shooters the game's ever seen. Really like Trottier, got to know him over the years, a really good guy. And, for an organization that really, for a long time was just a losing organization, this has got to be such a breath of fresh air. But is it bittersweet at all for some Islander fans knowing this is the last year on Long Island?
You know, Jason, I think that's the perfect word, is bittersweet, because, they are having this renaissance season, and especially at the Coliseum where, the building's been sold out each and every game as they kind of count down the home games that remain there. So the bittersweet part of it is, yeah, you wish they were staying, where they've played all 43 years in the National Hockey League. But the flip side of the coin is, you're happy that they're not going to Saskatoon. There were rumors of that they're not going to Kansas City. There were rumors of that. And they are staying, geographically on Long Island. The island itself is 110 miles long, and Brooklyn is a part of that island, although to a lot of Long Islanders, that invisible line that separates Long Island from New York City is a tough line to cross. So again, they'll have a challenge in bringing some old fans over, but they'll certainly get some new fans when they start at Barclays Center in Brooklyn come October.
They are sitting atop the Metropolitan Division with 67 points, albeit only one up on the Penguins, three up on the Rangers and the Capitals. It's ultra tight. Opozo is out, I think, for another 4 or 5 weeks. I think they're 2-3 thus far without him. Clearly, that's a big void, but the good news is he'll be back for the playoffs. Do you see Gar Snow looking to tweak something? And usually the last few years it's been trading guys away. What would he like to add if he could in a perfect scenario?
Yeah, I think in a perfect scenario, Jason, you look for something perhaps on that top line. Now, again, Kyle Opozo, as you mentioned, should be back around, early March. So it's almost like you're making a deal to get, a great player into your lineup that wasn't there when he returns. He was their leading scorer a year ago. This season he was second in scoring only to John Tavares, and he has that great chemistry with the Islander captain as well. So perhaps, a first-line left wing is the one position they've really struggled to fill this year. Right now, Anders Lee's done a nice job there the last couple of games, but he's the seventh different left wing that started a game alongside John Tavares. Of course, in years past, it was Matt Molson for years and years. It was Thomas Vanek last year, and they've always had, a nice trio up top. Well, this year it's been mainly the duo of Tavares and Opozo. Now, Josh Bailey's kind of taken Kyle's spot with him out due to injury, but I think if he could find a high-scoring left wing, and wouldn't every GM love to find that, to just kind of perk up that top line and try to get some chemistry down the stretch, that might be the one move he'd like to make, I think.
Any names that you would think are possibilities?
There's been a lot of names out there, but I don't know for sure. I really don't even want to speculate right now. I think, when it gets a little closer, everyone will take a better look at it. But, the thing is, he's very unwilling, Garth, to give up any of the young prospects in this organization or anyone off his current roster. And, it's funny, everybody talks about deadline deals, but the best move that Garth made actually was the Saturday before the season began, when he made trades that brought in both Johnny Boychuk and Nick Leddy. So, you can't do better than he did on that final Saturday before the season began back in October. So if he doesn't make a deadline move, you look back at those moves and say those were the moves that really, in my mind, turned this club around. They really, in the offseason, had addressed goaltending. They had addressed depth up front, but they hadn't done anything on defense with less than a week to go before the regular season. And, he gets not only Boychuk, but he gets Leddy too. And both defensemen, highly coveted by every other GM in the National Hockey League, and he lands them both on the same day.
What are the chances Boychuk stays there?
Well, it's interesting. He really does love it on Long Island right now. He's a great fit in that room. The guys just rave about him, as the guys in Boston did as well. But every guy that gets that opportunity to go to unrestricted free agency, boy, it's tough to sway them away from that. And again, I don't, put it against anyone who wants to test the water, so to speak. You may get just one shot in your entire career to be an unrestricted free agent, and that's what Johnny would be come July the 1st. But again, the job he and Nick Leddy have done on the back end, they're both very different on on the ice. They're both very different off the ice, but they complement one another so well, and they've basically been, you know, the top pair since they arrived together on Long Island. And the big thing too, Jason, is they both brought Stanley Cups and recent Stanley Cups with very good teams. Of course, Boychuk with the Bruins and Letty with the Blackhawks, and the Islanders didn't have anybody on their current roster that had ever won the Stanley Cup. So come playoff time, I think those two are going to be even more valuable. But I'm sure Garth Snow would like to get Johnny Boychuk locked up long-term before July 1st arrives, but I think Johnny may want to test the waters and see what he would get, you know, on the open market.
All the numbers for Boychuk and Letty, offense, defense, plus, minus, advanced statistics, they're all looking very good for them as a pair. I want to talk about some of the young forwards as we're joined by Chris King, the voice of the Islanders. Ryan Strome, Brock Nelson, 34 and 32 points respectively for these two. Nelson plays about 2 minutes more per game. What are the strengths, similarities, and differences of these two?
Well, oh boy, that's a good question. And they are, you know, both having terrific seasons, both second-year players. Brock primarily playing center, and Ryan, who really was a center most of his career, has been slotted on the wing, although he has played a little bit of center. And Brock more of a, you know, a bigger, a physical presence, certainly, and a more of a goal scorer, I would say. Ryan Strome, a little craftier, more of a playmaker who can really pile up the assists and use his creativity out there on the ice. But they've both been pleasant surprises. I mean, Brock Nelson went off to an incredible tear to begin the season, got to 15 goals, and then has really struggled of late to score, whereas Ryan Strome's been pretty consistent, and of late he's almost a point a game every single night. So the two of them got a chance to play together for a little bit of time, actually, on what we called the kid line in those days with Nelson Strome and Anders Lee. Strome's only 21, Nelson's 23, and Anders Lee was 24, and they had some nice chemistry before they were broken up when Anders Lee went to that top line. So I think, you know, both players have brought certainly a different package, and both have chipped in really well when you consider the fact that Strome's the third leading scorer on the team and Nelson fourth. For second-year players, they've provided a lot of nice depth behind John Tavares and Kyle Poso as the top-scoring duo on the club.
Franz Nielsen, maybe one of the more underappreciated guys just for his overall two-way play. Let's look at matchups now. I think we know who the four teams are in the Metropolitan Division that are going to make the playoffs. From your vantage point, who's the best matchup for the Islanders? Which team would be the worst matchup for them in the first round?
Wow, it's really a tough question, Jason, because the division, as you said, is so tight. I mean, right now the Islanders are in first place, the Capitals are in fourth, and the four teams are separated by just 3 points. But the good news for the Islanders, they have dominated within their division this year, Jason. They are 17-2 against the Metro Division and basically .500 against the rest of the NHL. So the reason they're, you know, so high in the standings is because they've dominated against all those teams that they possibly could match up with in the opening round. They've won 10 straight games in the Metro. They haven't lost a Metro game at home all year. They're 10-0 against everybody in their division on Coliseum ice. So, you know, Islanders-Rangers, of course, is the dream matchup for everybody that I think they all would want. Islanders-Penguins was a great playoff series 2 years ago for the Islanders where they put a scare into Pittsburgh in the opening round. They bowed out in six, but a couple of those games were two tough overtime losses. And certainly the Washington Capitals, you know, have caught fire and are really making a charge and a chance to even take over the three spot tonight if they can beat Anaheim at home in what should be a great game. So I don't know, you know, who's the best matchup for the Islanders, but I think the matchup all fans would want to see is Islanders-Rangers. They haven't played each other, you know, in the playoffs since '94 when the Rangers were on their way to the Cup. But to me, that would be a fitting series for the Coliseum to hold in its final year in the National Hockey League.
Oh, man, as a guy who's not even from that area, I'm telling you, I'd love to see it. I love old rivalries, and the Rangers-Islanders was one of the best. It would, like, and I know the game's different, but it would still be heated, and it would just be a perfect ending for the last year in Long Island for those two teams to at least meet, whether it's in the first or the second round.
And you know what, Jason, that's the reason the rivalry is so great is what's happened in the playoffs in those years. They've met each other 8 times in the playoffs and, you know, legendary series when the Islanders were on that cup run. They had to go through the Rangers in 81, 82, 83 to get to the Stanley Cup. They had to go through them in 84 to get to the finals when eventually, of course, they fell to Edmonton. But the Rangers pulled off a huge upset of the Islanders in 79. The Rangers, again, on their way to the Cup, steamrolled the Islanders in the 94 playoffs. So the reason that rivalry is what it is because of those playoff series. And the very first playoff series the Islanders ever won was 1975 against the New York Rangers, really the series that put them on the map on that overtime goal scored by the late J.P. Parisi. So, you know, there'd be no better way to send the building out than with the Rangers-Islanders one more time for all the marbles in the final year on the island.
Oh, it would be an outstanding end. How sad is it going to be? Like, I've been in that building a few times. You know, obviously it was outdated and everything. And the move to Brooklyn, how is it going to impact the fan base?
Well, I think you're going to have, you know, a lot of new fans that are going to come in from New York City because Barclays Center is so easy to get to via mass transit. There's 11 different subway lines that come in there, and you have Long Island Railroad coming directly to the front door as well. And I think for the fans, it's just a different mindset because for 43 years, you never took mass transit to an Islander game. You drove your car, and now you almost can't drive. I don't want to say you can't drive, but the parking is very limited. It's very tight in the area where the building is, and it's so much easier to take mass transit. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, getting the fans to change their mindset. There are a lot of older fans who are not happy that, you know, the team is moving what essentially is 25 miles west of where they are right now. But there are a lot of younger fans who are excited about having a brand new building, and they did play two exhibition games there, one each of the past two seasons. And, you know, the reaction was mixed. I do think that for the diehard fans, they'd love to see them stay where they are, especially now when they're having this renaissance-type season. But I think for new fans, and especially those in New York City and maybe even in New Jersey and Connecticut, they're excited at the opportunity to be able to jump on a train and get to an Islander game that way, which they've never been able to do in 43 years prior.
Well, we'll look with interest here in Edmonton as Oiler fans hope that maybe one day their team can start to climb up the standings like the Islanders did after many years of losing. I appreciate your time, Chris.
Anytime, Jason. Have a great night.